Hey, did you, when you were growing up, did you have, what? Did you have, like, really random made-up names you would call your brothers, like, that made no sense whatsoever, and that if someone else were to overhear you guys, they'd be like, what did you just call each other? But to you, it was, like, a really big insult. What I'm getting at is that my brothers and I will actually end with our, like, best friends growing up, too, Tracy and Blake. We used to call each other Big Fat Ugly Manatee.
Nice. That was
our big insult to
Burn.
Each other. Big Fat Ugly Manatee.
Hey, I'm Colby.
And I'm Kate.
And this is the Kate and Colby Show. Hey, podcast family. This is Colby and Kate.
Hi.
For another episode of the Kate and Colby Show. We're here with a couple glasses of wine and some dark chocolate.
I still really want something to call our listeners. You know, like Gaga calls them monsters and...
I just said podcast family. That's original.
Hi, family.
Pod, no, I like pod that. Fam.
Pod fam. Ooh, pod, because isn't that what... Pod-ly. Is it dolphins?
Yes.
And they're like really close, tight-knit.
Pod fam. Pod fam.
They're our pod.
Can fam be spelled with a PH though? Pod fam.
I don't know. I was getting excited for it because I thought you were finally taking me seriously about having something to call our listeners, but.
I was.
Marshmallows.
That's already taken.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay.
We'll come up with something. Monsters, marshmallows, pod fam.
If you have any ideas, listeners, send them our
send
way.
Send them in. We're taking.
So,
requests.
Back to you, the listener. We're sitting here at our table, and I almost said we thought, but I'll just be honest, I thought, and Kate's just graciously
Which
going along, going along with it.
Which is interesting because you usually say I thought all the time when it is we, and then this time it's a only you.
Yeah,
and
spiritual
you
growth.
To say we.
This is what you're experiencing.
Fascinating.
In real time.
Fascinating.
I thought it would be fun.
The psychology of Colby.
And or interesting.
Mm-hmm.
What
did you think would be fun?
Have an episode where instead of Kate and Colby responding to a question that listeners send in, Kate responds to questions that Colby asks to get to know a bit more about the hosts, i.e. you.
Hmm.
So this episode is
You're
titled
interviewing me.
Ask Kate.
Oh, God.
By Colby.
Oh, God.
And I've got a few questions here that I want to ask
you.
And
I don't know what they are.
And she
this
does
whole
not,
thing has just been sprung on me.
She doesn't know what they are. I said I have 75 questions in my mental Rolodex. I could just pull them out at any time. And so I selected 6 random numbers in my Rolodex and wrote those questions down.
You're such a liar.
I don't lie. But I think it would be fun to get to know you a bit more. You know, I think our listeners get to know us a little bit through the way we interact and respond to questions and all that. But this is like straight up just you now. Time to ask Kate. So
scarred.
You are in the hot seat.
Please don't ever say that. Again. No, stop it. Stop.
Oh, I thought that was one of those.
What?
One of those moments that don't ever really exist where you say, stop saying that, but you mean keep saying it.
Yeah, that's not a thing.
I really want that moment to exist. Okay. So. We're starting off with this. This is question number 28. And the preface to this question is...
You're such a dork. You're going to confuse poor people. People don't think
I'm
like
not going to
confuse...
Listener, I think higher of you. You're not going to be confused.
Oh, my God.
I told you I have a Rolodex, 1 through 75 of questions. I picked 6 random ones. This is question number 28. Okay, so Kate...
Which is the first question.
Sure, you could look at it like that, but that's going to get confusing. Okay. You play a lot of roles. You are a full-time mom to our 4 beautiful boys. You are a full-time spouse to me, which is a lot of work. You are a full-time homeschooler of all of our children. You work virtually full-time for our church as well, and then some. And you have a very creative life where you are writing and parts of other nonprofits and organizations. So my question for you is this. How do you prioritize that in your life? How do you know how to find balance? and when you need to inject more into this and less into that? How do you juggle it all?
Whew. That's a big question, if ever there was one. Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm totally overwhelmed by that in a good way. It's a great question, but I'm just like, oh, man, that's like a whole thing, right? About people have written whole books about can women really have it all? How to balance and juggle all the things. And that's just between like a job and having some kids. And then as you named, I've decided it'd be fun to have like 20 jobs. Mm-hmm. And, the first response is I don't know. Hmm. And that's probably the truest response, honestly, is that I don't know. And I get asked this question all the time, not typically with a microphone in my face recording a podcast, but people will constantly ask me, how do you do it all? How do you do it all? And yeah, my first response is I don't know. I really don't. Which is to say that I don't know that balance, is a thing. I don't know that I juggle it. Like if you think of juggling, like keeping all the balls in the air and keep going, I don't think I do that. I think of balance the way that, you think of balance when you do yoga. And when you balance, you, actually like people think of balancing as like having equal weight on both sides. So like for our metaphor here, like all the things I do in life, like doing them all equally, right? Like giving
same amount of same energy amount and of focus myself. And strength. Yeah.
Yes. And so we think of that as what balance is. But in yoga, when you balance, what you actually do is you, plant yourself firm in the ground. Like that's how you keep yourself balanced, and upright, is that you focus on your feet pressing down and your arms pressing up toward the sky. Like it's more about your groundedness than like holding all the things, like mm-hmm. holding both sides equally the weight. You don't focus on like if you were gonna I can't even think of poses right now because I'm so tired from balancing all the things. But anyway,
so what do you ground yourself in then?
So yeah, so that's my answer, is being how do I balance it all? By grounding myself, planting myself firmly. I think that often comes down to two things. One, self-care, and then two, values-based questions. What do I value the most? And then really making sure that in my life, not all things are equal. I don't give the same amount of energy to all things. Hell no. And then making sure that when I ask myself that question of what do I value most, that it's actually what I value most, not what the world values for women to be most, not what you value most in me, not what, you know.
And that's been a journey for you, right?
Yeah, for sure. I can still practice it.
Ask yourself that question.
Yes.
Hear the answer and then trust and follow through the answer.
Yeah, so one of the many things that I juggle is that I'm part of an organization called She Is Called, that I co-create and kind of co-run with my friend Carla. Carla defines calling. So like what you're called to do in life, right? Like your passion, your work, or whatever things you do in life. She defines calling as the internal howl of passion within you. And her and I do a lot of work talking about what if women just asked, what do I want? And then the answer to that's their calling. Hmm. That's like, that's my calling. That's what I do. So I practice a lot asking myself, what do I want? Which is a practice that's really hard for people to do in general, and then really hard for women to do that. And I think that's a part of it, a part of juggling so many things and balancing it all, is to just ask myself daily, even like, what do I want from today? I asked myself that today. I woke up this morning and was like, I have a million things this week I need to do. It's Tuesday. What do I want from my day? And the answer for today was I want to go to the zoo with my kids and not worry about how long we're there and what I have to do when we get home. If the house is a total disaster tonight, I'm okay with that. You know, like you just do that. You just ask yourself that question, go from there and lead. So that's a little bit. And then the self-care thing that I mentioned first is like huge. I mean, that's
a great perspective on balancing and prioritize.
Yeah.
Okay. So question number 43. You came 4 years ago to our first staff meeting when we started our church, Sojourn Grace Collective, and you said, not a direct quote, but more or less, it's incredibly important that I am a pastor here, that I'm a co-pastor. Like you claimed that for yourself.
That's weird. Why did I do that?
That's my question. Tell me why that felt important to you. Tell me why that felt important to you 4 years ago. And then part two of that is, how do you think about that now, 4 years into it? So if you, can you go back to and why that felt important to you?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely was coming from a place of having been a, what they call a pastor's wife, which is like a whole role, right? Like, you don't typically refer to people out in the world of like, a dentist's wife or a librarian's wife or whatever, you know what I mean? Right. But then in church world, you know, a pastor's wife is like a whole thing, right? So, I had been that for, a long time, and I had seen firsthand, and this is just one response to that. There was a lot of things going on for me, but this is probably maybe the thing that was burning in me, the hottest. I had seen firsthand the detriment that that was to the church itself. Like, there's been so much work, so many studies done that shows that when women are subjugated, when women are less than, when women are treated as objects or property, which is what that's doing when you make like a pastor's wife a whole like role in person, that's making them like, you know, things. And so I've seen what that has done to the church and the detriment that that has been to the church. I think that all those studies they do out in the world about how when women are empowered, entire societies are empowered, that societies flourish when women are empowered. I wish that the church would value studies and intellectualism to the point where they would listen to that and be like, oh, holy hell, we need to empower our women because our churches would thrive then. So I've seen what that does to churches. So as we're sitting there in our living room saying we're going to start a church, I'm thinking we were all coming from a fear place of what if this thing fails, right?
Yeah.
We were all like, crap, what if this bombs? And my first thing
was, we haven't even started it yet.
Yeah, we were all afraid that it wasn't going to work. And my first thing was, well, it won't work if there isn't a woman at like the heart of the leadership.
Yeah.
So I just believed that big time. Like, I was like, this thing will not work. We all had our answers to that. Like, this thing won't work if, like, I remember that being kind of a thing. And mine was, this thing will not work if women are empowered and in such a way as, like, it's swinging the pendulum all the way to there. So, like, a woman has to be leading this thing.
Yeah.
Period.
Okay. So now it's been 4 years.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that decision?
Oh, my God. Best decision of my life, probably. besides marrying you.
Appreciate that. Oh, no, you're kidding. Okay.
No, but truly, like, I look back on that, exactly everything I just described, and I go, yeah, I was spot on. Like, absolutely. And it has been proven to me, like, time and time again, the amount of, especially men, you guys, the amount of men who come to me in our church and say, your leadership, your pastoring me, what you've taught me about emotions, how you've been a mother to me, has changed my life, has changed my spiritual life, has changed my relationships. And I needed, and the thing always is that they always connect to that is I needed a woman to be the one to do it.
And you had to be called the co-pastor.
Right. It had to be the pastor.
You just being the pastor's wife.
I wouldn't have done it.
Would not have done it.
Nope.
You could have, shown up in the same way and been the same sort of energy and presence.
Right.
But without the title.
Right.
And without the role.
Well, it's power.
It matters. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. So I feel amazing about the decision. And funny enough, like I look back.
You're right, by the way.
What?
It would not have worked had we not done that.
No, I don't think
it would have been a fun 6-month experiment.
It would have been another one of those. They tried to center the whole thing around a man and it failed.
Yeah,
for sure. And thank you for saying that. Oh, but I look back on me doing that and I'm like, it's one of those fun stories that you get to tell about your life, right? That you're like, wow, I can't believe I did that. And I'm so glad I did, because even though it was terrifying in the moment and it's like kind of horrifying to me that I was just like, oh, I'm going to be this. I'd never been a pastor, you guys. Like I just decided I'm going to be a pastor at this church. And no one expected that. No one saw that coming. No one knew that was a desire within me. No one knew that that was a thing. Like, that wasn't what the plan was. And,
remind me, did I know?
Mm-mm.
Did I?
No, okay. You were finding out with the whole rest of the room sitting there. So yeah, I look back on that story.
So I knew
and I'm
we
like,
were going to do it together. But right. I don't think we'd ever talked at that level. So I'm just trying to rewrite.
Yeah, but together when we were talking about it, was still placing. It was still the way that the old church talks about it, where it's the pastor and the pastor's wife. But yeah. Anyway, I look back on that story and I'm like, that's one of those badass stories you get to tell about your life, where you're like, that is hilarious that I did that, and so badass. Like, I just love that I have that story in my pocketbook of stories to pull out of. There was this one time when it's just crazy and fun, and I don't know, I just love it. So how do I feel about it now? I feel that. I feel like it's an insane story that is amazingly funny to me, and like, I can't believe my own gumption because I'm not secure in anything, and for some odd reason I just that's how much of a passion it was for me that I just pushed through all insecurity.
I love it.
I just I feel great about it, and I just feel like it was the right call, and all kinds of beauty has come from it.
All right, so the next question, which is number 17, is kind of a spin-off of that, and I'll set it up by saying you are a dynamic, insightful, engaging, smart, and increasingly expandingly talented preacher, again, that you started 4 years ago. I'm going to do this. You're amazing. I love listening to you. I love learning from you. And you're a woman. You have been your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
So what's that experience been like for you to be a woman preacher in our church and in our community? What sort of feedback have you gotten? How has that felt for you?
Yeah, I could answer that in so many ways. So I guess I'll just like rapid fire what comes to me first and see where we get us. There's a lot of pressure in that. We've found in our line of work doing progressive church. Being pastors of progressive church, we found that our church is a magnet for people who have been through church world their whole lives, right? So most of our congregation is made up of people who have lived the experience of patriarchal church world. All they have ever heard is men preaching, and they're like, so, you know, they've got their fill of that. Yeah. And so what we found is that people will actually voice how much they need to hear a woman preaching. Like, they'll give voice to that. They'll be like, can Kate preach more? Because we need to hear her preaching. So there's a, which I love, and I'm like, oh, that's just amazing. But there's a little bit of pressure there to be like, I need to do this thing because I'm a woman. Like, that is why I started doing it, and I still believe in doing it for that sake. But that there can be some pressure in that when you're trying to do something that, you know, preaching involves a lot of creativity and a lot of thought and...
When do you feel that pressure?
It's just like an in general pressure. It's not like a specific
like
moment.
During the sermon writing or
no,
during
no, no,
the delivery?
No, it's just like an in general lived experience pressure. Just there's not like a moment. It's just it just comes up for me of like, and well, I guess, and the answer to when do I feel it is when I've gone like, because sometimes I'll go like a couple months without preaching. One time I think I even went like 4 months without preaching. And I'll feel the pressure then of like, and that goes back to that balance question of like, during those times I'm focusing on some other stuff, right? And that's what I found necessary. But then I'll feel the pressure during that time of, crap, I got to get back up to that pulpit because this is needed. And it's not necessarily at those times always in line with what I want or what works for my life. But I feel the pressure. So
I imagine you've had so many people reflect back to you how great of a preacher you are and how your sermons have been super impactful. And I imagine that some of them have included the, because of your gender, like, have you had that sort of feedback where not only did what you say matter this much, or was this transformative, but that it came from a woman in the pulpit was like an added, like, have you had that sort of feedback, and what was that like?
Yeah, especially when, a couple specific times come up for me. One was when the first time I ever, when I first started preaching, I did a lot of focusing on emotional health and emotional wholeness, you know, like Brené Brown type stuff as far as content. I incorporated a lot of Buddhism into my thinking and preaching, and I really steered away from Bible teaching and Jesus-centered thinking. And so one of the first times that, and that was just kind of my own journey and just who I was slash still am. But slowly but surely, I've come to find it important to address the Bible and Jesus as well. And so I remember the very first time I ever did a Jesus teaching, like a biblical, like go through the passages of scripture and teach those scriptures and have it be very Jesus focused afterwards. And I like, I remember I named it at the beginning of like, this is weird for me. I haven't done this. This is new, just to kind of be honest about this is different for me. And like everyone came up to me afterwards and was like, so no pressure, but it's actually really, really impactful when to hear you teaching those as a woman, like we need a woman teaching those things, like that just makes such a difference for us, in how we hear the stories for all kinds of reasons. The people were describing how much more, the femininity of the stories comes through. Some of the people were describing just that you are a woman preaching these old thoughts is like this healing experience for us of like going back and, you know, just a healing moment of like, we've always heard guys say this and now to hear a woman say it. So different reasons.
Yeah.
But,
I remember the sermon you gave about the children coming to Jesus and having that sort of childlike faith. And yeah, that was so palpable in that room, how this passage being taught from your perspective and with your voice was just landing just like new fallen snow on a porch.
Yeah.
Just soft and sweet and like, oh, that's beautiful. Never seen that before.
Yeah. Cause we, no, I don't want to get into the whole thing about gender, but we need femininity back
we do.
In our teaching. So yeah, there's that. And then, I was starting to say something else too. People come up and saying that. Oh, and then, so the Bible teaching, people will come up and say specifically that. And then the other times that I've had people name afterwards that it's that I'm a woman that is meaningful after my preaching is when we've had tragedy, which I think is so fascinating to me. But so I happened, it was total coincidence. I happened to be the one, you were traveling, you were in Kentucky when, this is going to sound funny, when Trump was elected president. I just called that a tragedy. Yes, I did. And our people were hurting, like really, really hurting and scared. And the world was kind of shaken. And I just happened to be the one on schedule to preach that Sunday morning. And funny enough, that's happened to me a few times now where I happen to be the one on schedule after a really big world country tragedy or whatever. And each time people will say, I'm so glad you were preaching because I needed a woman right now. And I just don't think that's, I think there's so much to that. I think that speaks volumes to what our world needs right now. Like that's everything I believe in. That's what our world needs.
Yeah. You say all the time that mothering will save the world.
Yeah.
And you mother our church in a way, to go back to the previous question, that you just couldn't do if you didn't have the role or the position or the title of co-pastor. Like you just, it's just not the same. And so preaching is just an incredible avenue for mothering our community.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
I love it.
All right. Ready for the next question? This is question number three. You are a strongly empathetic person. You feel other people. I'm wondering if you have any early memories of when that first sort of came online or when you first sort of tapped into that or were conscious of that part of you.
What a fascinating question.
That's why I was number three.
I feel like asking you the question back. Why is that a question?
You know what? You can even just take a moment to think about it. But yeah, I'm just wondering if there's any memories from growing up where you first sort of became being conscious of the fact that, being an empath, like, wow, I really feel what my family or my schoolmates or somebody's feeling. Like, did you ever think that was weird or did you just think it was normal? But anyway, I'm just curious if you have any early memories of the way in which you feel the people around you.
Yeah, I definitely do. And I definitely thought I was weird to an extent. I mean, you know how you always feel like your experience is normal until you realize you're not? Like, I remember when we did the Enneagram and once we figured out things about our personalities, we're like, oh, not everybody thinks that way. Like, I thought that was everybody. I thought it was a human thing, not a specific to me thing. So there's a little bit of that, of course, but I did think I was weird because I would like, when I would express my empathy, the reaction of other people. So that taught me that I was weird, right? Like feeling it, I just thought I was normal, but then I would express it and watching other people's faces like, what? This is lunatic. I have a very early memory of being in a grocery store and seeing a very, very old person, an elderly man, not have enough money for his groceries, and how, I'm about to cry now just remembering it. I remember it like almost like a movie scene, like seeing everything, like all this busyness around us. And to me, the only thing that existed in the world was that man who didn't have the money for his groceries, and how old he was, and how he had a hard time walking and he couldn't even carry his groceries. And I literally wanted to die because of that. Like I couldn't handle it. And I just wanted to like be with him. I wanted to go home and take care of him instead of go home with my family. And I was very, very young, like early grade school. So I have memories like that for sure. Yeah. Of just being wrecked by other people's existence, like just by them being a human at the grocery store, just that bothering me and being hard for me to cope with. Yeah, for sure. Hmm. What an interesting question.
Thanks for sharing. Two more questions. This is number 55. What is your favorite? I'm committed.
I love that the last question was question number 3, and now this one's 50.
What's your favorite feature in a friend? Your favorite feature about friendship?
Ooh. Oh my gosh.
If it's too hard to limit one, I could say what's one of your favorite. What's one of your favorite features in?
Yeah, you know me, it's really hard to limit it. So I will definitely do that. One of my favorite things, one of my favorite experiences of friendship ever, like I live for it. It gives me so much fuel for life, is when friends, show very clearly that they know like the intricacies of who you are, like in, the form of like texting you of a thing that made you think of them. And it's like so spot on. Like they remembered a show that you used to love from way back in the day, or they remembered, you know, something that you cared about or your favorite of something about you, like that maybe, especially if it's like something that you've hardly ever mentioned, but you did mention it once. That's my favorite thing in the world about friendship, is that because it feels surfacey a little bit, but then you realize how deep it is. Like to feel known is one of the most unbelievable like aspects of being a human ever. Like it just feels me. I love
you
feeling
should,
known.
Yeah. You should bring up that line from Lady Bird that you told me about the other day.
Oh my God. It's that. Oh, that's it. That's thank you. I love you. And you just did the thing too. How funny of an illustration is that? Huh. You just did the thing that I was saying, but yeah. So Lady Bird, best movie ever. So I'm trying to like figure out how to tell a story from a movie without like telling the whole movie. You know, that's hard for me. But so there's this point in the movie where this Lady Bird centers around this teenager, right? Like main character. And she is talking to an older person who she respects, has great respect for. And the older person points out to her from some writing she did. Like, she says to her, it sure seems you love this thing. It's the city she lives in. It sure seems you love Sacramento. Sure seems to me like it's so evident that you love Sacramento. And Lady Bird's response is, no, I don't. She says, I just pay attention. I just pay attention. And the older woman that she respects says back to her, well, I found that those are the same thing, loving something and paying attention to it, or loving someone and paying attention to them. And I was like, wow. I was so moved by it, so rocked by it. You haven't even seen the movie yet. I like had to tell you about it because I was just, I don't know, I resonated with that so much. I love that feeling of when someone has paid attention to you. And I love paying attention to people. You know how much I love to like point out to people that I know something about them, or like I remember things about people. I live for that. So when I saw it like played out in a movie where someone's pointing it out and calling it love, I was like, yes, exactly. It is love. Paying attention to the details about people.
I love it.
What makes them them. It's my favorite thing.
Beautiful. Okay, final question. This is question number 20. What do you hope that your life looks like in 10 years?
Oh my God. You know that's a difficult question for me. I could name like 23 things that I hope my... Do you want just like a general, quick...
What, first summation? Things that come to your mind. Just when you think about... What do you hope? Not what you think. I would answer it what I think, and I'd get all like realistic and pragmatic.
Oh, not me. You know I won't do that.
So for you, like, what do you hope your life looks like in 10 years?
I hope that I am really, really good friends with my children still. I hope that my hands are always in the dirt, that I have plenty of plots of earth to till, to garden, to care for, to make things grow. I hope that I am writing and speaking as much as what fills my heart with joy and passion. I hope that you and I laugh together even more than we do now. I think we're just getting to a point in our relationship where we laugh together. Have you noticed that? Mm-hmm. I think we laugh so much now when we didn't used to. And I hope that in 10 years we're laughing like 90% of relationship is laughing together.
Yeah.
Whether it's watching 9-9 or making inside jokes when we're in a group of friends or rolling hysterically in bed laughing about the fact that you didn't hear me say a word right and then you repeated back to me what it was and you sounded like you were saying it. And I just hope we're laughing a lot.
Yeah.
And I hope that I'm drinking all of the wine and eating good food and traveling. I hope that we're traveling. I hope that we are traveling like all the time. I hope we're taking our kids to other countries by then. Yeah. Okay. I'll stop there.
It's beautiful. Okay. I think this has been a delight.
It's been so fun. Thank you. I thought you were crazy, but that was fun. So
I am so grateful. And it's great. Our listeners get to know a little bit more about the Kate part of the Kate and Colby Show.
Yeah, we'll have to do this in the reverse sometime. All right. You're a great interviewer.
Oh, thanks. All right, Pod Fam. We'll see you next week. Hey, thanks for listening to the Kate and Colby Show. To learn more about us or hear past episodes, to send us a question or a comment, just visit thekateandcolbyshow.com. And just make sure to subscribe to the podcast while you're there. That would be super easy. The Kate and Colby Show is recorded and produced here in San Diego by Matthew Blake.